This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. It's May, my favorite month of the year, my birthday. In April, we reached a very important milestone with show number 200. And today we're opening the door to a brand new centennial. Yes, this is show number 201, the first of the next 100 shows. So we've chosen a very special topic. With the vast amounts of information at our fingertips, how do we know how to process it? How do we know what's reliable? How many sources do we check before we make a decision? Now, some of these decisions affect convenience or relatively mundane issues. But the question for today's guest is, how do you filter all the medical information? How do you know if a source is reliable? And what if you read two sources with opposite opinions? What's the tiebreaker? To address this special topic, we have a very special guest, Dr. Marco Chapin. Yes, for show number 201, we are going to mark the occasion with Mark. That's a Mark joke. But he's the perfect guest for many reasons. He's the director of the Division of GI and Hepatology, also the vice chair of clinical affairs for the Department of Medicine, and the Schultz Leeds Professor of Medicine at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine at NYU Langone Health. He's also the recent past president of our national society, the American College of Gastroenterology, and he brings the trifecta because he's boots on the ground taking care of patients. He asks the questions. He does research looking for new information, new answers. And he's a teacher. So he's a master of explaining medical issues in clear detail to students, residents. But what makes him a quadrifecta is that he's a radio show host. NYU, what I have to praise you here, Mark, because it's an awesome radio station, Sirius XM channel 110, if you want to listen, 24/7, awesome information. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Marianne. First of all, I am so excited to be 201. I have a t-shirt made, 201, but what you do, medical information, the folks who listen to your show, it's such great information, but most importantly, the way that they can understand. And a lot of what we're going to talk today is about information that's out there that not only can they understand, but what's valid. There's a lot of stuff, and people really don't know how to turn to medical information and say this is valid versus things they might see on the internet that absolutely make no sense or have no actual scientific explanations behind them. So our information is not only important for our own health, but for the people around us, because very often we'll give advice, whether it's the family members, not recognizing that if we don't get the right source of information, we can actually pass on wrong information as well.
Yeah, and you're so right. And we could even, we're going to break today's segments into talking about personal information. When we teach students and residents how to be good clinicians and how to communicate well, we're on the provider side teaching how to do it well. Today's show is based, we're trying to help patients understand how to protect themselves and get the right information and kind of what their responsibility is at an office visit. Or so let's spend the first bit of time on how a patient can optimize their experience at an office visit or after they're being discharged from the hospital. Let's start with an office visit. What do you tell your patients?
Yeah, I think it's all about preparation. I tell my patients to prepare the same way you prepare for anything that's important. Going to a doctor actually is something that is time limited, and you want to use that time to maximize your ability to communicate with the physician's office, both the physician and the extenders. Make sure that you have the ability to communicate afterwards. And what's the best and easiest form of interaction? Because there are going to be things that come up after the visit, whether it's medications or questions or follow-up. So you want to come prepared, know what you're going to ask, know how to ask it, and also recognize that when you leave, the office visit doesn't end. So there are a few very important things I tell patients. Number one, most important, write it down. When you walk into a doctor's office, you get scared. It's like getting an exam or being on stage. And what's crazy is that physicians, Marion, you know this, doctors are the worst patients because you become so vulnerable. You are not in charge of the situation. So you could give yourself some control back by writing things down. Make a list of all the symptoms you're concerned about, questions you have, and then the things that you're really concerned about. Don't be embarrassed. Like, a lot of times I'll ask patients at the end of a visit, did I answer all your questions? And then a question comes out, doctor, do I have cancer? Even though I'm not thinking they have cancer, that's the number one thing that's going through their mind. Or they saw something on the internet that says they may have cancer. So writing down the symptoms, what you want to get out of the visit, and what the questions are will allow you not to forget them. Number two, if possible, have someone come with you. Having another person there will at least allow you to validate what you heard. Because a lot of times we hear words like cancer or risk, and you know, our brain shuts off. So having somebody else there. And finally, at the end of the visit, asking what's the best way to communicate afterwards? Because there are usually now electronic portals where you could type an email or a message directly to the office as long as it's not urgent. Getting that communication set up will help after the visit.
And I think you said that so beautifully, because it's our job then when we give an explanation that we don't use esoterica, we don't use words not familiar to the patient, and that it's not too brief. Because although we've talked about, say, preparing somebody for colonoscopy thousands of times, it's new to that patient. Or as you say, they're in the hot seat. So they're frightened. They're afraid of the test. They're afraid of the results. They're afraid of what it could do to their other medications and all those things that you mentioned. And so medicines, I think that's one of the big pitfalls, that when we ask people if they're taking any medications, sometimes they say no. We always have to remember, and the patient has to be prepared to say, but I go to the health store and I take this or that supplement, that guess what? It can be causing symptoms and or can interfere with the efficacy of meds they're on or meds you're about to recommend.
A great point, because a lot of people think of medications as things that they get from a pharmacy that are prescribed. But there's all the over-the-counter medications and holistic things as well. Probiotics, supplements given to you by perhaps one of the herbalists that someone might be seeing. And sometimes these things are what actually are causing the illness. I've seen all kind of side effects from things that I didn't even know patients were taking until I said, please write down everything you're putting in your mouth that you're taking either as a medication, supplement, or some type of energy or holistic enhancer.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I was going to save this for segment two, but it's timely here. I was just reading on the internet about a drug we're familiar with. I won't name the drug because I'm not being disparaging about the drug, but a lawyer, so people think, oh, well, he must be knowledgeable, and his wife, who's in business or something, started taking this medication that's going to make them live forever because it's used for a common illness, but we're finding out it might decrease inflammation, so they're not going to get dementia, and they're not going to get any other problems. And there will be people that believe that, thinking, hey, if I take that, I might make it to 100. And it's a shame because we'll talk about that a little bit later. But so then with more procedures and treatment being done as outpatients. We want shorter hospital stays for lots of reasons, more things done at home. That's another catchment area that as a person's being discharged from a procedure and they're still kind of fuzzy from being sedated or they've been in the hospital, those discharge instructions are so important as well. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, it's critically important. And also having somebody who's there with you. Usually if you're in a procedure, like a colonoscopy and you're sedated, you must have someone escort you home. And it's not just to take you home. It's also to listen to those instructions because you may not remember them. We're working with a lot of healthcare facilities, and clearly at NYU Langone, to try and make the discharge instructions simple and understandable. In fact, we'll talk about this later, but we have a whole AI system in place to look at the discharge instructions and make them so that they're easier to understand and kind of give us some guidance to recognize whether or not they're too confusing or they're not organized appropriately so a patient can understand. Also, the discharge instructions are helpful for other healthcare practitioners who may be taking care of the patient. So having documentation of what happened and what needs to happen, and if you're not clear, there's always a phone number that you could call. Again, don't be embarrassed, either the phone number or reaching out through the portal. But there are people outside of the doctor who are known as extenders. They're nurses. These are medical assistants who are very good at triaging questions and making sure that you get the information you need. You don't have to just wait to speak to a doctor because that could take much longer. And of course, if there's a medical urgency, you have to recognize that that must be stated. This is a medical emergency. So-and-so is happening. So they get you right to whoever the appropriate triage nurse practitioner or physician is to help you immediately.
Well, I think too, it's human nature to be sitting there and say, I understand all this. And there's a global understanding. And I'm not, again, I'm not speaking ill of the listener, but it's human nature. You're exhausted or you've just had surgery or even you're still slightly sedated. So we want that other listener. But the things we really want to make sure of is that when a patient's leaving, that especially if we prescribe something new, we want to talk about possible side effects. Will that new medicine interact with other medications they're taking? That's why it's so important that we know, you, the patients, you, our listeners, need to tell us. And it might be worthwhile to write your medications down and any over-the-counter meds like Advil or, you know, non-steroidals or aspirin or herbal supplements, any of those things, stool softeners, probiotics that can make you symptomatic, and laminate it. So you have it on your person all the time. When does, you know, that discharge from the hospital stay, when do you come back? Are we going to call you or do we want the patient to call us? Because I know through the years, depending where I've been, if it's a different system, people get lost in the sauce. Well, I didn't hear from you, so I didn't think I had to come back. Well, you were supposed to call us, or, you know, that has to be clear. What does the patient do if their symptoms recur? How do they schedule further testing, like the repeat chest x-ray or new labs? All those things, yes?
Yeah, and patients should always insist on getting a phone number in case they don't hear back from the office, so they don't get a phone.
Yes.
So that they can take the initiative. I always say this, that it's so important that we take ownership and empower ourselves to recognize that we need to be in charge of our healthcare. We can't just expect somebody else to do it for us because we're our best advocates, we and our family members around us.
Well, and you know, too, I'm not making excuses for doctors, but we're the reality is after COVID and because the elderly population is growing. There, we need physician extenders, as in physician assistants and nurse practitioners, to tell because there is so much detail to a discharge. So what you and I discussed the other day, I thought was interesting. People get a printed, when the internet first came along, people believed a post because it was had a logo and it was printed, it looked official. Well, anybody can make, you know, pick a font that looks convincing. So we hand out a discharge paper after a procedure to sedation that says, if you get a fever or you have belly pain or this or that, call this number. And I always write at the end because I see people fold it up and put it in their bag and never look at it again or toss it on their way out the door. I always write in my own handwritten at the bottom, you had no new polyps, but I need to see you in 6 months or whatever it is. And even if it's one sentence, they're going to read that because it's tailor-made for that person, yes?
That's right. In fact, what we're doing at NYU now is doing little video segments right after the procedure that they can access.
Hey, that's awesome.
Everything looks good. We found a small polyp, nothing to worry about. We'll call you with a pathology. We'll probably need a follow-up in 5 or 7 or 10 years, depending on what we see, and we'll go from there.
Brilliant. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, more from Dr. Mark Potchapin from NYU.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
And welcome back to Your Radio Doctor with our guest, Dr. Mark Potchapin from NYU Langone, and he's also a superstar from Hollywood, radio show host at NYU Langone's station called Dr. Radio on Sirius XM Channel 110. So it's super special to have you, Mark. Thanks. Mark, we just talked about a person's responsibility that you have to ask questions that you've been concerned about, whether it's your symptoms. You need to bring an accurate list of your medications that are both prescribed by a doctor and those things you can buy over the counter that can play a big role in symptoms and interacting with other meds. Let's talk about electronic records. You know, if we're watching, if we didn't exactly train with the Flintstones, but we are now in the world of the Jetsons. And with all this Star Wars kind of stuff, electronic records sound great, but they're not flawless, only because the data that is entered is only as correct or as good as the work of the person who enters that data. And what we're seeing sometimes, rarely, fortunately, is that someone go click, 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 and it's in that person, the patient's record, and it's perpetuated every time somebody else says, yeah, agree with the buff. Am I right? Let's talk about it. Electronic records.
Mm-hmm. Marianne, I can't stress this enough, that we talk about all of us. We say patients, but let's face it, doctors are patients too when we see doctors. So what goes for my patients goes for me personally. We must take ownership of our healthcare. So when we prepare, we talked about this before, we want to write down our symptoms, write down our meds, and write down our questions. We have to also look at the electronic medical record, because a lot of times data gets put, whether it's by accident or gets put in a way that they thought you were saying one thing, but you were saying something else, and a diagnosis gets put in. You might say, oh, I'm borderline on my sugar, and they write down your diabetes.
Pre-diabetic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or it's so easy for the words to get picked up the wrong way, and then a diagnosis puts in the electronic medical record. And guess what? It gets put forward to any other visit. Once you now have access to that record, any other doctor, it will self-populate. So if you, by mistake, have written down that you have diabetes, any other doctor is going to think you have diabetes. This is why you need to go to the portal and review your medications and your past medical history, the medical conditions that you have. Because if they're wrong, you can correct it. Usually you put forward to your doctor and they'll confirm it with you. Or when you go to any other physician's visit, they will review your meds and your past medical history. Start off by saying, hey, it says that I have diabetes, but I actually don't. I don't know why it says that, or it says I'm still taking this medication, but I'm not anymore. So again, taking ownership of that chart can help you, because then when you do go to your visit, it will help maximize that face-to-face time with your doctor. They're not entering all the meds and doing all this background work so that it can head right to the main problem, confirm with you what the issues are, and then you can go back to that list you wrote down and really hit all of the symptoms and concerns that you have to discuss with your doctor.
Absolutely. We've all used our cell phones to send a text message, and our fingers aren't quite as tiny as the dots where you type in a letter. So my big fat finger might hit E instead of R and change either the nuance of the message or make a mistake. And the same thing with somebody sitting there typing. I'm afraid the world's become a little bit robotic. Can I say that? I'm trying not to be negative, Nancy, here. You and I are just going to say, from our experience as providers and as patients, we know some of the possible hiccups, and we're trying to make people aware so they can protect themselves. That said, I was with a family member at a doctor visit 6 months ago, an important medical issue happening here. Let's say her name is Mary Jones. So her maiden name is the letter G. Okay, so in some places, her chart, I'm sitting there watching this, the doctor's talking to her, says Mary G. Jones. But a CAT scan from last year says Mary L. Jones. Whether that's her middle name in one place and her maiden name in another place, or if somebody gets married and their name changes, that is the... And I pointed out to the doctor at the end of the visit, I said, you know what? I noticed that the patient's name is different on her CAT scan than it is her. And her name's pretty common. There could be like 2 billion patients named Jones. So important that you open a My Chart wherever you are a patient. Yes, most hospitals have My Chart that you go in, check your name, check your date of birth, and look yourself. Does your name on your history and physical match your x-ray and labs? Yes.
Yeah, and then you'll have access to all of your data. You'll have access to the notes that are written about you, so you can review them. A lot of times those notes are at a level that doctors use to communicate with each other. But reviewing your past medical history and medications and allergies could be really important. And if you have questions, you can ask. The notes that we write in a chart are really at a level for the care of the patient at the medical education level. But the data that is in the chart that people have access to through the My Chart or My Chart equivalent usually is really just a list of the things that they should really have not only access to, but understanding of. And if they don't have this, then there are people that they can call in doctor's offices, it doesn't have to be the physician, who actually have as part of their job going through the My Chart, responding to patients, and making sure that things are accurate. Because to your point, if it's not accurate going in, it's not going to be accurate in the decision-making or going out. And the data that's in there has to be accurate, up-to-date, timely, and something that everybody would say, yes, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, it could be so easily perpetuated each time a new person opens that chart. So let's move on to how patients interpret or evaluate what they read on the internet, social media. You know, you said something really valuable. Well, you always say things that are valuable, but I heard you on another interview, and we're talking about COVID and how that information was disseminated. And my personal theory, having trained before HIV had a name, or seeing all these beautiful, healthy young people just melt away with infections we couldn't treat. And then just as I was finishing training, HIV was isolated and we figured it out and made some progress. COVID, as you say, we were treating it in real time. And I guess I could apply that to AI. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. But the internet, social media came upon us during, so during COVID, all these people were opining and we're dealing with this massive worldwide issue in real time. Tell us what you think about that.
Yeah, well, it's almost continuing in a way. Medical information is occurring so quickly that it does actually change in real time. So the question is, how do we get our information? Let's just start with people like ourselves, medical professionals, people practicing medicine. We usually get them from journals, but journals actually are a few months behind. So that's why the conferences, the meetings, the webinars from people who are really expert in the field. That's why I love Dr. Radio, because Dr. Radio is a valid source. I have experts on who are talking about the latest and greatest. In fact, we have a show called Medical Grand Rounds, where we literally take the Grand Rounds speaker that gives Grand Rounds all the doctors, and then we have to have that same speaker, him or her, speak to the audience that's listening to the radio show to tell them about what's new. And often they'll learn something, they'll talk to their doctors about it. But information is coming so quickly that our medical professionals first have to be trained and have access and how to actually process through medical journals and other means, particularly professional meetings and webinars. Next is how do we get that information to patients? So professional societies are very good at this. For example, as you mentioned, I was a past president of the American College of Gastroenterology. Tremendous amount of effort goes into making sure that the patient-facing component of our American College of Gastroenterology website has information that's up-to-date and valid for patients. A lot of professional societies do this. The American Cancer Society does this. Others, like MyMD, for example, I know it puts a lot of time. Universities, academic universities, very often will have patient-facing information. The CDC, during COVID, had important information. These are valid, but if you just search Dr. Google, if you just write in a question to Google, you have no idea what's coming back. And not only could it be wrong, it could be downright dangerous. And we all have these horror stories of patients following things that they heard on Google. And unfortunately, the American psyche is the quick fix. You mentioned this earlier. They want something to supplement, a pill, a miracle cure. And I always say, if it's too good to be true, it is. It's not true. And some of these things just go take a lot of hard work on the part of the patient, trying to sift through and figure out. So going to valid websites, talking to your doctor, your healthcare professionals, and asking them what they think, making sure if you're going to try something new, you pass it by whichever the appropriate healthcare professional is, and not just make the assumption that because your friend or the website says something, that it's good. Because there's so much harm that can happen with the wrong information, and there's so much good with the real information. The last thing I just want to say, Marianne, about this is that people look at COVID and say, oh, well, they told us one thing, and then they told us another thing. That is science. That is the way medical science happens. We learn something, we have the best data possible, we make recommendations, then we learn something else. We say, hey, there's actually a better way of doing it. Or perhaps this wasn't the best way, or this wasn't that the data supports currently, or we have a new medication now that's better than what we used before. But medical science is always progressing. And unfortunately, there are going to be recommendations that, in retrospect, may not be as correct as we thought when we initially made them. Or there's a better way of doing than what we did before. But that's the way things happen. And I think what we learned in COVID is that we need to over-communicate. Shows like yours on the radio, shows like mine, television shows, information portals that patients can go to that come out from valid physician, academic, professional society type of information. It has to happen quickly, and patients have to have access to it so they can be educated appropriately.
Well, it's such a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because I always tell my patients, sure, go on the internet to learn what questions you should ask from your trusted provider. It's not all bad, but I guess the distinction I think of between the times of HIV, that people back then were working together. I remember I was the head of dermatology when I was at Sloan Kettering, the cancer center training, and he was the one who put together that the common factor was the lifestyle, that multiple sexual partners or whatever, and they were getting this skin cancer, Kaposi sarcoma, that's supposed to happen in 75-year-olds. Why are these 25 and 30-year-olds getting this? He shared that, and it was a shared process, and there was humility involved. With COVID, it just seemed like a lot of people wanted to time stamp and say, I figured it out. Or I was seeing flyers from schools and such saying, trust your pastor, trust your, and I'm like, wait a minute. I hesitate to say too much on the air because I'm not an infectious disease specialist. Why would I trust my pastor to tell me what to do? But everybody was trying. Everybody was trying. But I think what we're saying is there, like you say, American Diabetes Association, American Cancer Society has an awesome website. I often refer people to it. So, and yeah, maybe that's a good point, Mark. When we see something in a journal, it could already be passed. You know, it had to be reviewed and go through a process. It could already be a couple months old.
It's true. You know, the other interesting thing is that so much depends on patient expectation. A good example is the COVID vaccine, right? When people were taking the COVID vaccine and were told that this was going to prevent you from getting COVID. In fact, what it really prevented was from you dying from COVID. You still may get COVID, but it'll be a much lesser disease. It'll keep you from being hospitalized and dying from COVID, which in the end is the most important thing we want from the vaccine. We want to save lives. But if you're expecting not to get COVID and you get COVID while you take the vaccine, you're going to think, oh, well, the vaccine didn't work. But actually, it did work because you didn't end up in the hospital. So sometimes we just get the messaging wrong. And I think that's a great example. And people have to recognize that when something's happening in real time, like a pandemic, we may get the messaging wrong. But at least the science was there. The science behind the vaccine was some of the best tested science that we have to date.
Oh, yeah.
And yet people were getting to question it because they said, hey, I wasn't supposed to get COVID, but I got the vaccine and got it. But actually, the real thought was that you're not getting sick or dying from COVID. Look now, I mean, COVID is still around, but you don't worry about dying from COVID the way you and I saw it when we were taking care of patients initially with COVID in 2020 and 2021. So, you know, medical science is incredible. There's so many amazing things. We just had a report about potentially modifying a kidney from a pig and using it to implant in a human. There are miracles out there that are occurring day in and day out. You talk about HIV. I remember when the protease inhibitors came, and I had a patient who was near death who got put on a clinical trial, and he put on 30, 40 pounds, unrecognizable. And I still see him now, you know, 20 years later, because he is healthy. And actually, HIV, although we haven't cured it, the viral count is zero. It's as if they don't have the disease.
Same with Hep C. Look how far we've come with Hep C. And I guess the silver lining to, an awakening like HIV or COVID is that we learn that much more about the immune system. And if the immune system is the army of soldiers that fight off infection or trauma or inflammation, the more we know about it, the more we can use it to our advantage to help people and heal. And let's take a little break and hear about this week's Real Champion.
Now, your Real Champion.
I know you've got the heart of the champion.
And now for your Real Champion. I call this segment, Every Day is a Gift. Life as a physician can be described by many adjectives. It's fascinating. As medical students, we learn about the wonders of the human body, then see the way diseases come off the page of the textbook when they manifest in living human beings. Then it's exhilarating to make a diagnosis, offer treatment, and watch the patient get better. And what could be more fulfilling than seeing a patient wake up after weeks in a coma, walk out of the hospital after a heart attack, or ring the bell at the end of a course of chemotherapy? It's an honor and a privilege, as well as an awesome responsibility when patients entrust me with their care. In fact, many patients confide in me with information they don't even share with their spouses or parents, forming a sacred trust. Call me old-fashioned, but that's a big reason why I don't call patients by their first names. I address my patients as Mr., Mrs., or Ms., because that formality represents my respect and that I take the relationship very seriously. Though I enjoy being friendly, my role is not to be the patient's friend. I'm the strong professional in the white coat who will work to maximize their chance for a positive outcome, knowing that there'll be times when I have to deliver disappointing news or help a patient through a difficult decision. The practice of medicine can also be humbling because no one can guarantee that every story will have a happy ending. You don't have to be a doctor to realize that we can't cure every illness. And sometimes fate manages to get in the way of our plans. As I've always told my medical students, I can give a simple baby aspirin to 100 different people and one could die. I can't always predict or prevent it. Through my training and years of practice, I would always don my white coat like a soldier in uniform preparing for battle. But when serious illness hit home, I was watching from the sidelines because my magic wand had no power. I was devastated when we lost my mother and then my sister from cancer. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't hold back the hands of the clock as my father faded away. Recently, several people in my personal world have become critically ill. Once again, frustration knocked at my door. How can my dear friend have cancer or heart disease or a stroke? What can I do to help them? Once again, I'm reminded that my white coat doesn't contain superpowers. Well, each of these dear friends has had a great impact on me. Each one has been a source of pure inspiration as they face their challenges with courage and a positive attitude.
They find hope in every small success and trust in God's plan. I marvel at their strength, which also is in part a reflection of the love and support of their families, friends, and faith communities who help to shoulder their burdens. But in return, it's the goodness of each of these patients that has brought those communities together. All too often, we struggle to find the right words to comfort a friend, like, you're in my thoughts, or I hope you're feeling better. But sometimes the ailing patient finds comfort just through your visit. Just showing up speaks volumes. No one has a crystal ball. We know not the day or the hour. So live each day to the fullest and let people know that you love them. The other night, I shared a call with one of my friends who is strong-willed and fighting hard. As I listened to her words, I could hear her smile. With tearful admiration, I told her what an inspiration she is to me. I apologized for crying and I said, I guess I'm not very good at comforting you. But in the end, she appreciated my open show of emotion and actually comforted me. In over 3 decades of practice, I've witnessed some miraculous cures and some painful disappointments. As a physician, I guess I'm expected to wear a stoic face, but more than once I've cried with a patient or their family members, and in the end, sharing their grief as a fellow human being was the best medicine. The gratitude of each one of my friends shines a light that reminds me what's really important and not to sweat the small stuff, because every day is a gift. We salute all the brave patients facing the challenge of illness, and I offer a special thank you to my dear friends for this special lesson. You're real champions.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about medical information and how patients can evaluate it and decide what's helpful and what isn't so helpful. And Mark, I love that you suggest that patients look to national societies. The American Diabetes Association, American Cancer Society, go to great lengths to keep that information updated. And sometimes, too, you will hear a medical report on TV or the radio, and I'm not going to say that non-medical people don't get the information out there properly, but there are two problems with medical information that is disseminated that way. In order to get people's attention, we have to truncate it and make it like a 90-second soundbite, and we miss the nuances. So if you're not sure, if the glove don't fit, talk to your doctor and say, I just heard this or that about drug XYZ, or does that apply to me? Make sure that it applies to you. Yes?
Of course, and I think that the more you can write down the questions you have and ask them by the medical providers you have, and that's where the portals become very helpful, because often the doctor's offices will have information ready to give to you because the questions are very common. The question you have is a question they might have heard 10 times before, 100
yes.
times before. So they have information. They have a website that they can send you to. So I like to first send patients back to the doctors. And usually when you go through the portal, it's not really an inconvenience for them because they're ready to answer these questions. But I love the ideas of the national societies. We have great patient advocacy societies like the American Cancer Society in the world of like pancreatic cancer, PanCAN. For every disease state, there are some very validated patient portals and patient-centered advocacy, specialty, subspecialty for the doctors that have patient-facing information sites. And then there are other sites like WebMD and others that have information. But the most important thing is not to just search randomly on the internet and just assume that someone who calls themselves a doctor is actually giving you medical talk about rallying the licensed physician income.
Fortunately,
you just don't know what you're getting, and it could be very dangerous.
Some of the doctors who say they are stayed at the XYZ Inn the night before. That's a commercial.
I'm always amazed that when I get sometimes I'll get emails or people reach out to me about medical information, new breaking information. I look and I say, this is just not right. This is I'm shocked that it's getting sent out. It's not even looking for it. It's looking for you.
Well, case in point, my husband and I were channel surfing the other night, and a show popped up. It was a medical show. And there was a woman who had a growth. And so the doctor says, do you have any family history of cancer? And she said, well, my dad had, I want to just make this up, esophageal. My mother had cervical. And he said, oh, that could really bump your risk. And I'm sitting there thinking, if your mother had cervical cancer, it was probably from HPV. It has nothing to do with genetics. But people are going to hear that and say, oh, no. And take that incorrect information and scare the heck out of themselves or you know, move on with it. I really think that chaos leads to confusion, leads to fear, leads to anger. And that's where I think people are unsettled these days a little bit because of all this. So we hope that we're helping people.
People are angry. Also, the 11th panel health record is going to give you information sometimes even before your doctor gets it. So sometimes I'll do a scan. You know, one of my areas of expertise is pancreas cysts and prevention of pancreatic cancer. And there's a cyst known as an intraductal papillary mucinous neoplasm, or IMNP. They may get a CAT scan or an MRI, and it says on that report, you know, consistent with IPMN. So what does the patient do? They get it before the doctor tells them the information. They look it up, and then look up the word neoplasm. Well, neoplasm, if you Google it, is cancer. So now they think they have pancreatic cancer, and they had it. They start looking at survival rates of pancreatic cancer, and I will often get the phone call. By the time I get it, the patient thinks they're dying. And I have to back them up. Oh, no, this is a benign cyst. It's small. It's going to almost certainly stay benign. We'll follow it. But without the information and the grounding of not only the medical information, but the expertise behind that medical information, people go off a rail. I mean, you can dig into this rabbit hole, and the next thing you know, you die from cancer. So you got to be very careful.
I had a woman who had a CAT scan at 7:30 in the morning. I'm doing procedures till 4 o'clock. The poor lady called two or three times through the day because she had a hernia in the foramen of Bachdelek. That's like saying there's an extra tissue in your purse. It means nothing, but the poor soul could have had a heart attack by the time she waited for me to call her back. So, yeah, things that get put out before we act as the colander. Would you say that we let the information that's important stay in the colander, the rest should go through? So let's then say, with all these advances in technology, AI in medicine, is that a welcome addition or will it add to the confusion?
I think the AI is great. I think as long as it's used to augment what we do, not as a substitute, but to help us do what we do and do it better. I'm using AI every day. In fact, you see I'm in my scrub shirt here. I have procedures all morning. We have an AI system that puts a little box around something it thinks is a polyp when I'm doing a colonoscopy. And it's just kind of nice to have that as a background, kind of like when you drive, if something recognizes something jumping in front of you, or if it thinks that you're veering too far into one of the other lanes. It's nice to have AI to help you do what you do well, do even better. AI can look at our notes. We're doing research at NYU, actually, trying to improve the overall note quality, making sure that notes written by our doctors have all the appropriate information, family information, have a differential diagnosis. And for discharge notes for patients, we talked about this. AI is helping us make them more readable and in a format that patients can understand. And AI is also potentially going to allow us to gather information so that doctors don't have to spend as much time typing and behind the computer, but making AI contact and talking to patients and using the medical knowledge that they have to help with the differential diagnosis and to help solve a problem and to decide on treatment rather than typing things into a computer that AI can do for us. I'm actually really excited about it. I don't think it's going to be Skynet, where AI is going to, you know, destroy us all. I think be careful with AI, because I do worry about the fakes and the deep fakes. I don't want AI to substitute for a doctor making medical knowledge, but I think AI can help give us the information at our fingertips. So there's new research that's being done. We can get that through our AI if there's medical records. Sometimes a patient sees me, Marianne. They may have seen 10 doctors beforehand, and they come in literally with a suitcase of information. Wouldn't it be nice if AI could go through all that, organize it for me, and help me get the information that I need to make my decisions, and I could ask it for certain components of that information? That's where I see it being very exciting.
Well, and you know what, Mark? I guess it was October of 2012 when it was a federal mandate that we go electronic or pay a big fine. So we do that. And I know our office at the time, we had 27 GI docs. Now we have 45. But at the time, our chief was wise. He said, let's just start with an intra-office electronic record. And it was easy capeasy. Then we went to an intra-hospital, got a little more sophisticated. And now most of Philadelphia and probably New York, I don't know, do you use Epic?
Yeah.
So that's intra-hospital. And we can connect with you or anywhere. But again, a friend of mine called today saying, I really need help. She has an uncle who's a widower, so he has children moved away, all this. He's pretty much alone. He's 82, and he has a medical issue. And he was in hospital number one, sent to nursing home, then back in the hospital. And each step, they might not all be on the same electronics. So a family might just assume that each place whispers down the lane, and it's not perfect yet. So I wonder if we could invent a chip that would take location 1, 2, and 3, so it's ready for number 4, and everybody just adds the discharge summary or something that we can make it a backup in case the system doesn't work. It's just so frustrating for these people. And even if it's not an elderly person who's a little fuzzy, like we said all through this, when you're the patient and you're sick, you're nervous, you're cold, you're hungry, you're worried about the test, you're worried about the result.
You're vulnerable. You are so vulnerable, and any of us. And I think that's one of the reasons why our doctors make such bad patients, because the doctor, we're in charge. When we're on the other side of the white coat, we recognize that vulnerability and feel so comfortable with it. It is awful. I tell my staff that when someone walks through the door to see a doctor, it's the last place in the world they want to be. They have to be here. They have no choice but to come because they're having symptoms or problems or concerns, or they want to stay healthy, but they don't want to come see a doctor. It's not where they want to choose to be. But we choose to be there when we go into medicine, when we work behind a desk, when we're drawing blood. So we have to recognize the vulnerability of our patients. And that tells us there's so much hope in medicine. We can never take that away. With all of these new advances in medical science, with AI, with the research that's being done, the recognition of the microbiome and our immune system can be used actually to fight off cancer, in addition to so many other things, there's so much hope. You can never take that away, Cormac.
Well, you make a good point that even doctors should not play Dr. Google. Remain Dr. Ritchie or Dr. whomever. Because I was in the company of a colleague recently who said, whoa, have you ever had Lyme? And I said, no. And she said, well, I had a bullet, you know, I had the skin lesion, and I went ahead and took the docs, and I feel better. And I said, did you go to your doctor? She said, no, I'm a doctor. And I said, holy Toledo. Personally, even my own children, when they would get sick or fever, I take them right to the people say, just order a script. I'm like, you order a script. I'm taking my child to the pediatrician. If I overcall it or undercall it, I'll never forget myself. And when it comes to you personally, you can't examine yourself and you're not totally objective. Plus, I'm a GI specialist. I'm not an ID. I might not be up on the latest drug for pneumonia or whatever the issue. Yes?
Marianne. I say, as a gastroenterologist, we're all the same on the inside. You and I know that. When we put a scope inside, you're a doctor, you're a patient, wherever you're from on the planet, we're all the same. We're all human. That's what combines our mortality. And none of us are above that. We may have a medical degree, but it doesn't put us above the fact that we can get sick and we're going to need medical attention ourselves. That's why we're literally all in the same boat. And once we start thinking we're not, we can get into trouble. That's why treating people differently and getting the great care, whether they're a doctor or whether they have some type of special access to healthcare that gets them more quickly to see someone, if they skip the steps, that actually require to take good care, the best care, problems occur. And we can't speak this out either. As physicians, we might be able to, but we can't, because we can't take care of ourselves. We're all human, we're all vulnerable, and we all need the same type of excellent quality health care.
And that's why we consider medicine to be an art and a science, because it's all about the nuances, baby. So many times if the students or lay audiences, I can see 100, I can give an aspirin to 100 people and one of them could die. Five of them could die. I don't know in advance. And that's why we have to stay humble. Let's take a little break and we'll be back with our wrap up with Dr. Mark Chapin.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of this week's show of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Mark Chapin, superstar radio show host at NYU's Sirius XM channel 110, Dr. Radio, GI Doctor extraordinaire, and a teacher and professor, and we've learned so much. And you know what, Mark? There are so many, we could spend another hour and not complete all the things that go through our minds. Medicine is an art and a science, and it has to be nuanced for each person. Again, you or I could get called to the emergency room, and it could be a patient with abdominal pain in 10 different rooms with 10 different diagnoses, and you have to pay attention. The machine can't do it for you, but AI might have a little glitter. It might help us, copy our words and file it so that we have more eye contact with the patients. What's your take-home message for our listeners?
I think to use a gastroenterological GI term for AI is digestive for us. It helps digest it. The take-home is for everyone listening to really take ownership of their health, to be their best advocate, not just for themselves, but for those around them. What I mean by that is really know what your medications are and have a list so that at any time you can actually bring that out and show someone. If you ever get sick and someone wants to know what medications, it's nice to have a list on you. Know your medical problems. Have a list of that as well. Because when you see a doctor, being prepared with both the medications, past medical history, and your family history. If you have a family history of heart disease, of cancer, of diabetes, of autoimmune diseases, et cetera, these things could be very important for doctors to know so that we can move away from the American psyche of healthcare, which is you go to a doctor when you're sick with a symptom, and change it to go to a doctor when you're well to prevent the symptom, to prevent the disease. In other words, we can do so much in the world of prevention, but we have to know what your family history is. What are your risks? What are the things that might actually be something we need to focus on you specifically that to help us prevent the disease? So that's why family history, and that's why knowing occupational exposures, for example, tobacco exposure leads to different types of screening. But this is something that we can put forward. So one, take ownership. Know your meds, your past medical history, and your family history, and don't be embarrassed to share that, particularly with your healthcare practitioner. Go to your doctor once a year when you're feeling well. Get the things that can make a difference for longevity, like your blood pressure, like your cholesterol, like your physical activity, like your diet, like your weight, and your screening. In our world, screening for cancer such as colon cancer, we can prevent colon cancer by and large through screenings. And it doesn't have to be a colonoscopy. Although you and I probably use colonoscopy as our main tool to both prevent and diagnose colon cancer, you can use a microscopic blood test of the stool. And there are other tests coming up, but not to be afraid, again, to try and focus on the prevention and the wellness rather than the disease and the illness. There's so much you can do. And if you are suffering from an illness, not to give up hope, because of all the research that's being done, if someone takes away hope from you, then see somebody else, get another opinion, go to a subspecialty area, go to an academic institution that might be specializing in a new clinical trial of that illness. But there's always something we can do for patients, even at the end of life. There's hope for peace and comfort, and people shouldn't be afraid of palliative care, but there's always hope.
And that's a beautiful way to summarize it, Mark, because you could say, well, I don't live in a big city or I live in a rural area, but now that we have telehealth, even if you can connect, as you say, with a medical center that specializes in pancreatic cancer or whatever the issue is that's relatively unusual, telehealth is still better than you're speaking right to the doctor. And that family history has to be nuanced. I've heard people say, do you have any family history of cancer? Nope. But we know to say, because prevention is key, and colorectal cancer is the most preventable cancer when you think about it, because we go in on these search and destroy missions, we find pre-cancer, erase it, voila, you got a clean slate. But how about, did your mom and dad ever have colonoscopy? Anybody have polyps? Oh yeah, well, they had polyps, but they were nothing. No, my darling, that may lead us to instruct you to begin 5 years or 10 years earlier. So we have to get, so when you're together at Thanksgiving or a family wedding or a graduation, say, how did Aunt Sally die? Or if there are young deaths in your family, it could be cardiomyopathy. So many nuances that when somebody's sitting at a computer, they're not going to say, can I interview anybody in your family? No, your responsibility as a patient is to go digging. Yes, it could save your life.
And it doesn't have to be your own subspecialty. I just diagnosed myopathy. The patient had a family history of young death.
Yes.
Sudden death. Which they thought were heart attacks. It turns out it was a inherited cardiomyopathy. There's a lot that you can do about that. And again, it's taking the history. Don't so assume that someone had a heart attack because maybe it was an arrhythmic death.
Yeah.
Get the family history. Parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, siblings, know your family history. But to your point, you find a colon polyp, that becomes a family problem. It puts everybody at risk, potentially, for polyps and early colon cancer. We're seeing a rise in young colon cancer. But we can do something about it. At least we can start by getting a history so that we know who's at risk.
And if somebody has genetic testing that is quote-unquote negative, you still go by the family tree picture. My mother, my sisters, who were identical twins, and any breast cancer all over that patchwork quilt. But no positive genes. So it's the family tree that we look at. Dr. Mark Potchapin from NYU Langone, thank you so much. I hope to see you at our national meeting, Digestive Disease Week. Now, for listeners, how much fun would that be to go to Digestive Disease Week? Doesn't that just sound awesome?
I can't still make fun of you about it. EDW, that sounds like a real party, Dad.
Yeah. All right. Well, safe travels, Mark, and thank you once again.
I'm done, great. Thanks for all that you do, and I appreciate being to a lot. Yes, to all. Guest number to all.
I am going to make t-shirts. I like that idea. Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 p.m. here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. And thanks for celebrating our 201st show. Listen to all of them again on Audacy.com. That's AUDACY.com. As always, a special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross. We also enjoy our association with Helio.com, the medical information company that offers the latest in healthcare news and information. Visit Helio.com. With 200 shows in the library, today's show is the first in the new centennial, the next 100 shows. Send us a question and we'll read your first name and town on the air with an answer. Tell us about a champion. Write to info@yourradiodoctor.net, info@yourradiodoctor.net. And remember, all during the month of May, we need your help. Your Radio Doctor is sponsoring a diaper drive for needy mothers called Diapers for Darlings. All diapers will be sent to Catholic Social Services, but be assured the diapers will be distributed to mothers and families of all faiths. It's so easy to help. Visit the website, yougivegoods.com. That's yougivegoods.com. Click on Find an Event, then look for Diapers for Darlings. And now, more than ever, we need prayers for peace in our world, in our country, in our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.